The numbers and spirit of the Goths were equal to the most dangerous adventures. The use of round bucklers and short swords rendered them formidable in a close engagement. The manly obedience which they yielded to hereditary kings gave uncommon union and stability to their councils. Decius found the Goths engaged before Nicopolis on the Jatrus, one of the many monuments of Trajan's victories. On his approach, they raised the siege, but with a design only of marching away to a conquest of greater importance, the siege of Philippopolis, a city of Thrace, founded by the father of Alexander, near the foot of Mount Hemus. Decius followed them through a difficult country, and by forced marches. But when he imagined himself at a considerable distance from the rear of the Goths, Cniva turned with rapid fury on his pursuers. The camp of the Romans was surprised and pillaged, and for the first time their emperor fled in disorder before a troop of half-armed barbarians. After a long resistance, Philippopolis, destitute of succor, was taken by storm. 100,000 persons are reported to have been massacred in the sack of that great city. The time, however, consumed in that tedious siege enabled Decius to revive the courage, restore the discipline, and recruit the numbers of his troops. He intercepted several parties of Carpi and other Germans, who were hastening to share the victory of their countrymen, entrusted the passes of the mountains to officers of approved valor and fidelity, repaired and strengthened the fortifications of the Danube, and exerted his utmost vigilance to oppose either the progress or the retreat of the Goths. Encouraged by the return of fortune, he anxiously waited for an opportunity to retrieve, by a great and decisive blow, his own glory and that of the Roman arms. The Goths were now on every side surrounded and pursued by the Roman arms. The flower of their troops had perished in the long siege of Philippopolis, and the exhausted country could no longer afford subsistence for the remaining multitude of licentious barbarians. Reduced to this extremity, the Goths would gladly have purchased, by the surrender of all their booty and prisoners, the permission of an undisturbed retreat. But the emperor, confident of victory and resolving, by the chastisement of these invaders, to strike a salutary terror into the nations of the north, refused to listen to any terms of accommodation. The high-spirited barbarians preferred death to slavery. An obscure town of Mysia, called Forum Terebronii, was the scene of the battle. The Gothic army was drawn up in three lines, and, either from choice or accident, the front of the third line was covered by a morass. In the beginning of the action, the son of Decius, a youth of the fairest hopes, and already associated to the honours of the purple, was slain by an arrow in the sight of his afflicted father, who, summoning all his fortitude, admonished the dismayed troops that the loss of a single soldier was of little importance to the Republic. The conflict was terrible. It was the combat of despair against grief and rage. The first line of the Goths at length gave way in disorder. The second, advancing to sustain it, shared its fate. And the third only remained entire, prepared to dispute the passage of the morass, which was imprudently attempted by the presumption of the enemy. Here the fortune of the day turned, and all things became adverse to the Romans. The place deep with ooze, sinking under those who stood, slippery to such as advanced, their armour heavy, the waters deep. Nor could they wield, in that uneasy situation, their weighty javelins. The barbarians, on the contrary, were inured to encounters in the bogs, their persons tall, their spears long, such as could wound at a distance. In this morass, the Roman army, after an ineffectual struggle, was irrecoverably lost. Nor could the body of the emperor ever be found. Such was the fate of Decius, in the 50th year of his age, an accomplished prince, active in war and affable in peace, who, together with his son, has deserved to be compared both in life and death with the brightest examples of ancient virtue.
The title of emperor was then passed by the Senate to Hostilianus, the only surviving son of Decius. But equal rank was given to Gallus, who also held real power in the empire. Gallus bought off the Goths, promising to pay them annually what Gibbon calls a large sum of gold, on condition they should never afterwards infest the Roman territories by their incursions.
This stipulation of an annual payment to a victorious enemy appeared without disguise in the light of an ignominious tribute.